through 35 or so years in the Deathlands. They'd carried him out of innumerable life-threatening situations, but what he'd also had was luck. This time, it was luck that saved him. The patterned floor was simply a huge death trap, triggered by his weight. A massive jolt of electricity ran through the steel tiles, designed to fry anything and anybody. The mechanism was 100 years old, designed in the Megacol times before the ancient Earth died. The nuke generator responded nobly to the sudden call on its resources, providing the surge of power. But the wiring had rusted and frayed, attacked by damp and cold. Ryan was already starting to move, diving forward to try to get off the black and white patterns. His heart pounded with the bitter realization that he'd likely be too late. The breath was driven from his body, and every muscle went into spasm. But the aged Sectrap malfunctioned before anything near full power had been able to lash at the intruder. It had still been enough to knock Ryan on his ass, leaving him shuddering in shock.
Son of a bitch!
He lay on his side now, the Sigsaur 20 feet away, near one of the sectors. When Ryan tried to sit up, he found that his left arm was jerking, the fingers opening and closing, all utterly beyond his control. It took a quarter hour before he could stand. He staggered backward when his pulse was finally back somewhere toward normal. He looked at the floor by the entrance and saw that some of the metal tiles appeared to have melted and that thin tendrils of smoke were still snaking up from between them. The box on the wall that had been gleaming with green lights now hung off at an angle, its interior blackened and charred.
Terminal Sectrap. I wonder if there's any more like you.
His blaster safely holstered again, he made the rounds of the other doors, finding them securely locked against him. All but one. Ryan was puzzled why a double sec barrier should have been used for a single room, and why it had been left unsealed when all the others were triple bolted. The room was empty, except for a huge dust sheet draped over something. Ryan grabbed a corner and pulled. The cloth disintegrated in his fingers, falling apart in a cloud of stinking dust. Blinded, Ryan staggered away, rubbing at his eye. Blinking through tears, he tried to recognize what it was that stood on a low stone plinth. It was some kind of machinery. He wiped his eye with the sleeve of his coat, finally clearing his vision. He could now see there was a wide red line painted on the floor around the plinth. The word warning was repeated several times. A rectangular white card, which looked as though it had been propped against the machines, had fallen over when he tugged the cloth away, and now lay face down inside the red line. He looked up at the machines, fascinated by their strangeness.
Droids?
5 humanoid robots stood there patiently, legs slightly bent at the knees, arms dangling at their sides. They were no more than 5 feet tall, built mainly from rods of chromed steel. They gleamed in the overhead lights, untarnished by the passing of long, solitary years. The heads were polished domes, with small crystals set in place of eyes. These were dull and lifeless. Below was the android equivalent of a mouth, a metallic slit, half open, with a hint of teeth within. Was there a sharpness there? It wasn't possible to tell. The neck was tubular, articulated, like the small scales on the throat of a serpent. The chest was armored, broad, containing all the comp controls. Each arm was slightly longer than a human's would be, in proportion to its height, giving the robot the appearance of an orangutan, slouching toward eternity. One arm ended in 3 digits. 2 were like pincers, with honed edges. The 3rd was a clubbing hammer. The other arm terminated in 4 sharp blades, their points winking like needles. The droid's legs were a little shorter than those of a man, ending in flexible platforms, each tipped with shorter versions of the finger knives. They were the ugliest creations that Ryan had ever encountered.
Wouldn't like to meet you guys in a dead-end street at midnight.
Ryan was about to turn away, but the fallen notice captured his attention. Part of his concentration was focused on the quintet of stunted robots, and he ignored the red line and the warning painted on the floor. He stepped across it and bent to pick up the large card. Far away, there were 5 dark panels on a control console. One of them became illuminated with a single word, Activate. Another set of screens lighted up and flashed Genetic Recording. The card was creased, the corners dog-eared and bent. The writing was covered in dust, and Ryan wiped it clear with his sleeve, his forehead wrinkling as he followed the faded printing. It was headed with a single line in maroon capital letters. SEC. Hunters. Underneath, there was an explanation, as though the five creatures had been exhibits in some sort of a military museum.
Huh. Developed in the late 90s using latest cybernetic technology, the Sec Hunters are the most sophisticated devices known to man, and are years ahead of any comparable machinery from the Eastern Bloc. They sniff out the genetic body pattern of their prey. Once locked onto that one individual, they will follow and destroy, even though it takes them to the ends of the known world. Nothing short of total destruction will divert them from their lethal purpose.
Huh. At the back of Ryan's neck, the short hairs were beginning to prickle. He looked around the silent, deserted room, but nothing moved, not even a grain of dust. There were a few more lines at the bottom of the notice.
Warning. During test conditions on the Sec Hunters, it is very dangerous to cross the marked red line. To do so may expose you to a potentially serious threat. If this caution is ignored, and death, maiming, or harm to personal possessions results, then the government of the United States declares itself not liable for any, all, or several suits for damages arising. In the event of accidental crossing of warning line, immediately notify the nearest guard, who will negate termination instructions to the devices. You have been warned.
Not much of that made any sense to Ryan. He dropped the card back onto the floor and walked a few paces away, looking up at the five motionless pieces of ancient machinery. They had an air of menace about them that was unsettling. Ryan decided that he wouldn't spend the night in this same room and turned on his heel, walking out through the sec doors back into the rest of the redoubt. Behind him, the stillness was unbroken. For long seconds, nothing happened. Then, in the empty silence, red lights clicked on in the eyes of one of the Sec Hunter droids. Less than 2 miles from his father, Dean Carter was getting himself ready for sleep. He was tired and sore, his hands blistered, his lungs filled with filthy yellow dust. Dean tried to clear his throat of the ochre phlegm that threatened to choke him. Sulfur mines are hard on breathing. The 10-year-old boy lay on his back, staring at the rocky ceiling of the cavern, only a few inches from his face. He didn't cry. Dean Carter knew better than to waste his time on pointless weeping. The past 48 hours would have been enough to reduce most men to helpless self-pity. Ryan's son had been devastated by what had happened. But he wasn't about to give in. Not to anything, nor anybody. The slavers had come at him out of a clear day, without any warning. By the time he'd seen the sign of their dust, it had been way too late. His Smith & Wesson 425, with its 10 rounds of rimfire 22 caliber, had been safely and uselessly back on his bunk in the Lauren homestead. They'd been brutally competent, but their hasty body search hadn't found the thin-bladed knife with a turquoise hilt sheathed in the small of Dean's back. They tied his wrists behind him with a slender thong of rawhide, then hefted him onto a horse on a lead rein. The jump had been done in two lots, Dean surmised. The chamber wasn't large enough to accommodate the whole party with their captives. There had been four other prisoners with the gang, all male, all young. One was an Apache who spoke no English. The leader of the raiders had tried to make him talk, but the Native American had shaken his head and spat at the man, who'd drawn a long knife and cut the Apache's throat from side to side, dropping him to the sandy desert to kick and bleed. Once they'd arrived in the freezing redoubt, the prisoners had been hustled along, then thrown warm coats and gloves to combat the bitter chill. The march down into the valley had been slippery, with rutted ice along the trail. Dean had spotted the mine and caught the sour smell of sulfur. He remembered the yellow spoil heap from a similar operation in the east, where he'd been with his mother. As they drew nearer, he was able to appreciate the scale of the scene. There were dozens of men and a few women, hauling tubs of raw earth in iron buckets along narrow rails. The guards wear a silver circle either on caps or on their chests. Although unknown to Dean, none of the guards actually knew the significance of the symbols they wore. Along to his left, hidden in the shadows of the three-tiered bunks,